This is your weekly checkup with Howard Feldman and Dr. Anton Myberg, where medical innovation meets human understanding.
6:05. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good evening. Just a quick update. The security situation in the Heilbron area has become volatile. South African National Defense Forces have been deployed to that area in response to the current situation to assist law enforcement. Members of the public requested to avoid Heilbron area until further notice. Please make use of alternative routes and avoid entering anywhere near that area while emergency and security operations continue. We will keep you posted even throughout normal programming and update you throughout the next hour. A very, very, very good evening to you. For thousands of years, we've accepted aging as something that simply happens. You get older, you slow down, you lose muscle mass, your memory isn't quite what it was, and eventually your body begins to fail. But what if we've been thinking about this all wrong? Tonight, we're looking at one of the most exciting areas in medicine, and that is longevity. Not just living longer, but staying healthier for longer. Can we actually slow down the aging process? Can we delay frailty, protect our brains, maintain our strength and independence, and add life to our years rather than just years to our lives? We'll explore the science behind the biological aging, inflammation, hormones, exercise, nutrition, sleep, and some of the latest advances in longevity medicine. Because the goal isn't simply to reach 120, it's to arrive there still living life on our own terms. Dr. Anton Myberg, good evening. Hope you're well.
I was, but that was so long, I feel like I've longevitized after that.
Really? Is this how it is going to be?
This is how it's going to be, yeah.
Okay, so let's start with the first question, which is, what exactly is longevity medicine?
So it's an unbelievable discipline. It's an emerging, what we call, interdisciplinary medical field, which focuses on extending a person's health span. And that's the number of years lived in optimal health, rather than simply extending their lifespan. So instead of waiting for a chronic disease to develop and treating the symptoms, this is a data-driven discipline which treats biological aging itself as a modifiable process that can be slowed, paused, or potentially reversed. And it's a proactive versus reactive treatment philosophy. So conventional medicine operates on a reactive model. It diagnoses diseases such as diabetes or heart disease or dementia after symptoms appear. Longevity medicine reverses this paradigm. It views aging as the root cause of most chronic diseases. And by targeting the cellular and molecular mechanism of aging early, doctors and practitioners aim to delay the onset of age-related decline. And there are a number of pillars that are related to this practice. So we look at things like advanced diagnostics, targeted nutrition, exercise physiology, sleep optimization, stress and mental well-being, as well as adding things like artificial intelligence, hormonal optimization, and what we call geroprotectors and supplements. That's something like exploring therapeutic compounds like rapamycin, cellular NAD, some things that are aimed at delaying cellular senescence. And we know that it's rooted in peer-reviewed geroscience, which is geriatric science, but longevity medicine is still a rapidly evolving field.
And it certainly seems to be a new field in many ways. What is the difference between lifespan and health span?
So I think this is a core question because it's basically quantity versus quality. So lifespan is the total number of years a person lives from birth to death, whereas health span is the period of life spent in good health, free from chronic disease and major functional limitations. So your primary focus of lifespan is the quantity of years, whereas with health span, it's the quality of those years lived. You measure your lifespan with a simple chronological count in age of years, but your health span, you look at the functional capacity of a person and their wellness. And the endpoint of lifespan is biological death, whereas the endpoint of health span is the onset of disabling chronic disease. And, you know, there's something called a health span gap. So modern medicine.
Is that like your difference in your vitality age?
if you do the vitality stories you do.
No, I don't.
So modern medicine has drastically extended how long people live through advanced crisis care, antibiotics, pharmaceuticals, although our health span has not kept pace. So you get a mismatch of about a 9 to 10 year gap at the end of life. And during these final years, a lot of people experience progressive physical degeneration, cognitive decline, frailty, and chronic illnesses like diabetes or heart disease. So we've got to look at how to extend your health span.
Mm-hmm.
And even though genetics only accounts for about 10 to 30% of your total lifespan, your daily lifestyle and your choices with it dictate how long your body stays functional. So we've got to go with your favorite thing, physical exercise. And that with a combination of strength training and cardio to protect and prevent muscle loss and preserve mobility. There's nutrient-dense nutrition, which controls your blood sugar and limits systemic cellular inflammation. Once again, sufficient sleep, which facilitates cellular repair. Stress management, lowering cortisol levels. And something like social connection, which reduces the biological risks associated with isolation. And, of course, preventative healthcare, which is prioritizing your screenings and routine blood work to catch chronic conditions early.
We're talking about longevity. I would love your questions. I'd love your input. 061-895-1019. With me in studio, Dr. Anton Myberg. We'll be back just after this.
IFM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
12 minutes past the hour of 6, I'm Howard Feldman. There is high tension in Alexandra, law enforcement on the scene. Traffic remains heavily disrupted and heavily congested around Alex following a tense afternoon where marchers clashed with foreign nationals. While immediate violence and clashes have died down over the last hour, the situation on the ground remains highly volatile. We're talking about longevity. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg, and we would love your questions. 061-895-1019. Are humans actually aging faster today?
It's a funny thing because I actually discussed with a pediatrician the other day who tends to agree that they are aging faster because we're seeing menarche and puberty developing much earlier.
So I would have thought we're aging slower because when I think about my father at 40 or 50, like they were old.
Listen, Sherlock, you don't look so...
I think I do, but that's not the point. The point is I think people were older, younger then.
I think that's a common misconception from younger people looking at older
people.
It might be. So, I mean, the answer is yes, people are actually aging faster today. And it's faster biologically compared to previous generations. So we may be living longer overall, but successive people like your millennials and your Gen Z, they exhibit what we call wear and tear. And that mimics older chronological ages, which lead to a rise in your early onset diseases. And research indicates that this biological aging is not a slow, continuous process. Our human bodies experience spikes in cellular aging and molecular shifts, especially from our mid-40s on to our early 60s. But the accelerating aging is driven faster by a few factors. So one is what we call a generational age gap. And there was a study published in Nature Medicine that found that people born between 1990 and 1999 displayed higher biological aging compared to those born between 1965 and 1969. So that means, as we're actually discussing now, a 40-year-old today has an older biological profile on the inside than a 40-year-old decades ago.
Interesting. I would never have thought so.
And there's another thing called a senescogenic environment.
Say that again?
Senescogenic. Senescogenic is elderly people, essentially. So modern lifestyle and our dietary habits chronically overstimulate our bodies, and that triggers pathways that age us. And the key drivers that are obesity, chronic stress, nutrient-dense but highly processed diets, and sedentary lifestyles and habits. And, of course, things like cancer risks. Accelerating aging is directly linked to the troubling increase in early onset cancers. And we also get something called organ-specific aging, where one in five healthy adults has at least one organ aging significantly faster than the rest of their body. But I think without sounding like the prophet of doom, you know, there's a silver lining because your biological age is malleable. In other words, if you make active lifestyle adjustments, like focusing on strength training to maintain muscle mass, limiting alcohol, managing stress, adjusting carb intake, particularly as you hit your mid-40s and older, you can effectively hit the brakes on the aging process.
Why do some people seem to age slower than others?
So, once again, we're looking at your biological age, okay? And that's essentially how quickly your cells and tissues break down compared to this actual chronological age. And that's driven by genetics, your cellular mechanics, lifestyle choices. So your DNA sets a baseline, but once again, daily habits like diet, exercise, stress management, these dictate how these genes are expressed over time. So you have genetics playing a role here, and we do have protective genes. These are inherited variants of the genes that help regulate cellular repair, antioxidant defense, and metabolic deficiency. There's also lifestyle choices that alter your chemical tags on your DNA without changing the code itself. So good habits can keep genes that protect against cellular damage switched on. So you can get somebody, for instance, that's say 40 years old and they've got a high sort of risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Their father had a heart attack at 45 and their grandfather at 50. But you can change that genetic predisposition by actually changing your way you exercise, eat, etc. There's another thing which is very big in longevity medicine. That's called telomere maintenance.
Say again.
Telomere, okay? So a telomere is a protective cap at the end of each chromosome. So every time a cell divides, these telomeres shorten. So people who age slower naturally preserve their telomeres better. And part of longevity medicine is to give medication to help slow down the shortening of the telomeres, okay? And this allows your cells then to continue repairing tissue without reaching that limit of cellular senescence when the cells stop dividing and cause tissue decay. And then we get a nurture effect. And this is much more, people know much more about this without even knowing about it. It's something called insulin sensitivity. So if you have efficient glucose metabolism and insulin sensitivity, these are strongly linked to slower aging. So diets that are high in refined sugar, those trigger inflammation and speed up aging. And of course, chronic stress, poor sleep, those flood the body with cortisol, which accelerates DNA damage and cell breakdown. But deep sleep gives the body time to repair and restore. Another thing, sun exposure. You know, people who are under the sun for 90% of the day, or they've got visible skin aging, which is caused by what we call photoaging, because the ultraviolet light damages your DNA, breaks down their collagen. Avoiding toxins like smoking, heavy pollution, excessive alcohol consumption, that limits the oxidative stress that damages your cellular DNA. So all these things can interact and prevent aging at a quicker rate.
So is aging itself becoming treatable?
Yeah, it definitely is. We're seeing aging almost as what we call a treatable medical condition rather than an inevitable process.
Interesting.
So there's no cure that stops time entirely. We know that. But we've shifted from treating age-related diseases individually to actually targeting a whole biological mechanism of aging itself to expand what we call that health span. And that can be based on what we call cellular reprogramming. So that was interesting. It was done by a Boston-based biotech startup company. And they dosed patients with an experimental injection which was aimed at cellular reprogramming. And it's something called the Yamanaka factor, okay, which trains aging cells in the body to act young again. So what they do is they give you
did
a clip
of... you say younger number?
Yamanaka.
Oh, not like younger.
Not Yamazaki, Yamanaka.
No, I thought younger.
Yeah, well, essentially. Yes, but I mean, it's a group of four proteins that act as a genetic reset button for your cells. And these proteins can rewind the cell development and erase its basically maturing into blank stem cells. So it's unbelievable
amazing
what they can do from that. And then, of course, we get our pharmaceutical interventions. There are trials where existing prescription drugs, something like an immunosuppressant called rapamycin, or even the diabetic drug metformin, can delay age-related conditions and mimic longevity. But the big caveat here is that these medicines aren't without risks, you know. You can't just put every person on something like metformin because you can get something called lactic acidosis. You can get kidney failure. You can get diarrhea. You can get all sorts
of
things.
So not everything's for everybody.
It sensitizes your pancreas to insulin, but you can drop your sugars on these type of things as well. So you really have to be careful with what you go on and have to do it through a longevity doctor who understands physiology and how the body works and how it interacts with other things. And literally the only clinical proven way is through things like physical activity, caloric restriction, healthy diet. Yes, you go, but
I didn't. And I was
sleep.
Just going,
I see you rolled your eyes with the side effects.
No, it's obviously allergy season.
I'll say something that I know you believe this. Regular exercise is our fountain of youth. It boosts blood flow, preserves muscle mass.
What's fascinating, and I say it genuinely, it comes up in every single weekly checkup.
Everything. And it's because there's so many advantages from that, from caloric restriction and sleep.
Yeah, you know, yeah, like it's those three things.
Those three things are your game changer in every single thing we do.
We need to go to ads. Just before we do, Renee says, my mom lived a long life. She was 93 when she died. She only started suffering when she was 92. She exercised every day, walked briskly every morning, played bowls, crocheted, used to teach the old people at Golden Acres Gym. She ate very healthily, no junk food, although she did love chocolate. And I reckon that her healthy lifestyle contributed to her longevity. That is from Rene. And Anton L says, when you think of this, it's true. Life is a sexually transmitted disease, which is fatal.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 6:23. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg. We're talking about longevity. We would love your questions and your comments. 0618951019, and we will do our darndest to get to them. So let's talk about cellular aging. I know that you've kind of referred to it already a few times. Tell us what cellular aging is.
So cellular aging is not actually just a passive process of decay. It's an active process, complex, which reshapes your cell's internal architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So science has revealed that cells actually age through different pathways. And these changes, they can now actually map them and track them and potentially target them to prevent chronic diseases. So in essence, cellular aging is not uniform. You get a cell type specific clock.
Mm-hmm.
So scientists analyze these single cells and they discover that different cells age at different rates within the same person. So your biological age of your specific cells, like your muscle or your brain cells, can even be used to predict onset of diseases such as Alzheimer's years before symptoms appear. And you get something called your zombie cell problem. So when we speak about senescence, which is aging,
mm-hmm.
when cells suffer too much damage or their protective telomeres, those chromosome caps, mm-hmm. become too short, they actually stop dividing. And they stop dividing because they want to prevent turning into cancer. So these are called zombie cells. And then you get a process of inflammaging. That's instead of dying off, these zombie cells remain active and they start secreting toxic chemicals that will then trigger chronic low-level inflammation. And this continuous low-level inflammation is your driver of tissue degeneration, frailty, and diseases like arthritis and heart disease. So you essentially get a housekeeping failure because you get a breakdown of the structure and then you've got to try and get on top of that. And there's a very important term in longevity medicine. It's called autophagy. So as cells age, their recycling mechanisms that clear out these misfolded proteins mm-hmm. and damaged parts become less effective. And autophagy is when you clear out those things. So this actually stops working as well. And this leads to a harmful buildup of protein aggregates and toxic metabolic bystanders. And one of the key concepts of longevity is how to stop this from happening. So in other words, how to not get the autophagy who can filter out these things.
Okay, so the next few sections that I want to talk about is muscles, in terms of aging, is muscle the organ of longevity, hormones, the aging brain, and then move on to the future of longevity science. So let's kick off with muscle. Why is muscle one of the strongest predictors of survival?
So if you think about it, a muscle is a critical organ for your metabolic health and your physical independence, because a high muscle mass mm-hmm. and high muscle strength act as strong predictors of survival, because in essence they regulate your blood glucose, they secrete protective hormones, and they prevent fatal falls. And these things ultimately lower the risk of both cardiovascular disease and premature death. So it's almost like a metabolic sink. Skeletal muscle is your primary place for glucose disposal in the body. And if you've got adequate muscle mass, this helps buffer blood sugar levels and significantly reduces the risk of insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes. From an endocrine point of view, your muscles are then seen as dynamic organs and they release signal molecules, which we call myokines.
Right.
And these myokines help reduce systemic inflammation as well as enhance brain function and protect your organs from disease. And then when you look at your physical independence and fall prevention, You need adequate muscle strength and muscle power. That's in other words, the ability to move weight with speed. These are vital for balance. When older adults, maintaining these capabilities can prevent debilitating falls and fractures, which are major triggers for rapid health decline. You know, so often we see in hospital someone comes in with a fracture and they become immobile and then they get pneumonia and then they die.
It becomes a sort of vicious cycle.
So, you know, with nutrients regarding like severe illness, for instance, like cancer or infections, your muscle serves as a reservoir for amino acids. So patients with higher muscle reserves have a much better chance of surviving because they can draw from the muscles and recover from a critical illness. So muscle strength, and we often measure muscle strength in patients by looking at their hand grip strength. That serves as an indicator of the body's overall neuromuscular and cardiovascular integrity. Interesting that, eh?
Very, very, very interesting.
So if you've got robust muscle power mm-hmm. or strength, that correlates with living longer, mm-hmm. outperforming traditional biomarkers like your body mass index in predicting early mortality. So now I'm sure we're all standing there.
Everybody, I'm doing that right now.
Clenching your hand muscles and feeling your hand grip.
I feel quite strong.
Yeah.
What is sarcopenia?
So sarcopenia is a term that doctors refer to when you've got a progressive age-related loss of muscle mass, strength, and function.
Oh.
It essentially impacts your physical independence. So you make an everyday task like climbing stairs or carrying groceries increasingly difficult, and it significantly raises the risk of falls and fractures. And I can tell you how often I hear an elderly patient come to me saying they're not short of breath, but when they walk up an incline, they have to stop because they get tired and short of breath. And it's not because they've got a breathing problem. It's because they've got this sarcopenia. They've got this muscle mass loss.
Okay? Yeah.
And interesting enough, everyone thinks that sarcopenia starts when you're about 70 or 80. Sarcopenia begins from the age of 30 onwards.
What?
Your body starts losing about 3% of its muscle mass from that age per decade. And as you hit the age of 50 to 60, you get an acceleration of this decline. So for many, the symptoms become noticeable, particularly as hormones change, such as in menopause in women, because that also speeds up muscle wasting. And then from the age of 60, it can become severe. So some people can actually lose as much as 8 to 10% of their muscle mass per decade, leading up to a 50% reduction in this. And it happens because beyond simply getting older, there's less physical activity. You lead a sedentary lifestyle, and then you get rapid muscle loss. You get hormonal shift. You decrease your hormones like testosterone and estrogen, and that impairs your body's ability to repair muscle. You get protein synthesis decline. So the body becomes less efficient at converting dietary protein into new muscle tissue. You know, I always say to my patients with COPD and emphysema, if you're not eating and you're not eating enough protein, then your body needs to get the energy from somewhere else. So it will take the protein from your lungs, which is a muscle, and break down the muscle tissue. And then it puts you at a further deficit with your breathing. Protein's very important in this type of thing. And although the aging process causes the muscle loss, you can stop it because sarcopenia is a highly preventable and treatable disease if you engage in regular strength and resistance training. And that's the most effective way to slow down or halt the muscle loss because you stimulate muscle growth and preserve nerve function together with a protein-rich diet.
And it can be reversed.
It can be reversed. Not 100%, but
yes.
You can strengthen those muscles so you actually get some form of inflammatory response as well as building up strength.
Let's talk about hormones, metabolism, and energy. What happens hormonally when we age?
So as we age, our endocrine system basically shifts. It leads to changes in production and sensitivity of hormones. So most hormone levels, especially our sex hormone levels, mm-hmm. decline over this time. And that's talking about testosterone and estrogen, progesterone and growth hormone, those type of things, okay? So if we look essentially at your sex hormones, that's estrogen and progesterone in a woman. During perimenopause, which is usually in a woman's 40s, the ovaries begin producing a lot less estrogen and progesterone, which eventually leads to menopause. By postmenopause, your estrogen levels have dropped significantly, and that triggers your hot flashes and accelerates things like bone loss.
Mm.
Whereas in men, testosterone levels generally decrease gradually from the age of 30 at about 1% a year, and that definitely can impact muscle loss, libido, and energy levels. Then you look at different other hormones like growth hormone. So secretion of your growth hormone drops steadily over time. That's a process called somatopause, and that contributes to reduced lean muscle mass as well as an increase in body fat. Melatonin, that production starts declining with age. And we know that melatonin is very important in your normal sleep-wake cycle, in your circadian rhythms. So when your melatonin drops, it can lead to frequent insomnia. Insulin sensitivity decreases with age. You can lead to insulin resistance and a high risk of developing diabetes. Even the thyroid gland endocrinology can shift. So your hormone levels can remain stable for many, but target tissues come like more sensitive. So it slows down your body's overall basal metabolic rate. And then, of course, cortisol, your stress hormone, that changes everything and it impacts your ability, how to manage stress and recover from it.
What role does insulin resistance play in aging, if any?
So, I mean, insulin resistance plays a major role. You know, we used to think that, you know, just checking an insulin level was like a waste of time, that type of thing. But checking an insulin level actually gives you an onlook into the future to see if you're going to be insulin resistant with regard to pre-diabetes. And if you become diabetic, it challenges your whole inflammatory process in your life.
Right. And poor sleep, I mean, I think you've mentioned that impacts hormones as well and it has an impact on almost every aspect, doesn't it?
Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
Okay.
You know, sleep is one of the most important processes that we need to work on because it affects both your biological and cognitive aging process. And I mean, it causes systemic inflammation. There's, you know, well, we've spoken about this before, it causes impaired waste clearance. You've got a system in your brain called your glymphatic system, and that clears away toxic byproducts such as your Alzheimer's associated proteins. So short or disrupted sleep, that is prevented because you don't get the deep sleep that you need. So that short and disruptive sleep overwhelms you and you develop other problems. It also can cause cardiovascular and metabolic stress. So increase in blood pressure, sleep apnea, increase in your visceral body fat, skin damage because you drastically reduce your collagen production and cellular turnover. And then you get
the one thing
more wrinkles.
Wouldn't impact would be
under the eye, especially under the eye bags.
Yeah. Okay. So hormonal hormone therapies, peptides, are they part of the future or are
of
they?
Of course.
Just,
you know my feelings on peptides.
I know. I was just going to say, or I have to ask the question accurately: is are hormone therapies and peptides the future or just hype?
So they're both science and hype. To be honest with you, I mean they. I've always said that peptides are fantastic drugs, but they're not there to replace everything, but they definitely make things a lot better, okay? So they're highly promising because they optimize your health span, and that's the time where we say where you get life free from chronic diseases or much better. So if we start off with hormones, if you replaced hormones like testosterone, estrogen, or even DHEA in certain people who require it, you basically decrease the frailty, bone loss, and cardiovascular consequences that people have. And there's something called a bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, which is a proven medical intervention. So for women, menopause treatments protect bone density and heart health. In men with low testosterone, the therapy can improve muscle mass and metabolic markers. But if you use hormones as a general anti-aging preventive without diagnosed deficiency, or you try and just raise the levels to super youthful peaks like with testosterone, you can cause problems with fertility or promoting abnormal cell growth. Now, if you look at things like peptides, for longevity, peptides are absolutely fantastic because these are typically short-acting chains of amino acids that signal your body to repair, to restore, and optimize your cellular functions. And they're a few peptides that are hallmarks that of your aging that help with telomere shortening, mitochondrial dysfunction, immune decline, and collagen. So one of the ones that's very big is called Epitalon. And that study is to show how it's used for stimulating your telomerase activity, which helps maintain that telomere growth, the protective caps of your chromosomes, and supports actually circadian rhythm with sleep balance. Another one, copper, GHKCU, that's a naturally occurring peptide that diminishes with age. But it's also highly regarded for stimulating collagen and elastin production, which will improve your skin elasticity and support wound healing. MOTSI, that's a mitochondrial-derived peptide, that regulates your cellular energy balance. It's studied for its ability to improve insulin sensitivity, boost metabolism, as well as combat age-related metabolic decline. Thymosin alpha, this one I particularly like because
what's it called?
Thymosin alpha 1. Mm-hmm. It's a naturally produced by the thymus gland, which generally shrinks with age. But this peptide actually helps support and regulate the immune system to combat inflammation and preserve cellular resilience. And then we get all the other ones, like we call them the growth hormone secretagogues. So they're not growth hormone analogs. They aren't actual growth hormones, but they stimulate the body's natural production of its own growth hormone.
So that's, I just want to clarify that again, because people always get this confused. A peptide encourages the body to act on its own. It's almost
it's a
like
signal messenger,
it's,
exactly.
It's almost like a vitamin C helping your body fight,
No, it's not at all like vitamin C. So vitamin C is an actual product you take, and it works on certain sort of cascades and enzymes.
I know, I'm not saying it's the same, but I'm saying it's a similar concept in that it encourages the body itself.
It encourages the body to use its own, own stores of that actual thing. So when you take something, for example, like vitamin C, you're replenishing your vitamin C in your body that you don't have. Where here, you're actually getting this medication. So like a growth hormone secretagogue, like CJC1295 or surmarilin or tesamorilin, they stimulate your body's natural growth of growth hormone, which declines with age, and that helps in lean muscle maintenance, fat loss, tissue repair, circadian rhythms. And, you know, we know that a lot of the peptides are not FDA approved. But
July,
as I keep on saying,
July.
Wait for July, Kennedy, watch the space.
I know this. I follow the story. I mean, do you see a time, I know we'll get to it in a few minutes, but do you see a time where peptides are going to be so common for people with regard to anti-aging for health and
Definitely. I mean, if you look at GLP-1s, like if you look back 3 or 4 years ago when there was a huge outcry about things like semaglutide, Ozempic, that wasn't available and it was being taken away from the diabetic patients, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes,
it's like, what is Ozempic? Who even uses Ozempic anymore? There's so many better ones.
So 2023.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so let's move on to talk about the brain. Once we've done that, then we're going to come back to the subject of the which is about the future of longevity science. I'm Howard Philbin. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg. Let's talk about aging, the aging brain. What happens to the brain during aging?
So in a normal aging person, your brain experiences what we call a physical shrinkage. It's called muscle atrophy or brain atrophy. And that's especially in the frontal lobe and the hippocampus of the brain. So your neurons in the brain shrink. The fatty insulation of the brain, the myelin, or the nerve fibers deteriorate, and your production of your chemical messages like dopamine and serotonin decrease. And this will naturally lead to slower cognitive processing and reduced working. So the aging process affects the brain in many ways, like from a structural to a chemical alteration. You get that structural shrinkage where the actual volume of the brain decreases. So the cortex around the brain thins. You lose connection with those synapses in the brain, and that causes a reduction in the gray matter of the brain. You get a cellular degeneration where the neurons in the brain don't actually die off in large numbers, but they shrink and they retract their dendrites. And the dendrites are the branches that receive signals in the brain, which make communication between cells less effective. You also get a white matter decline, and the white matter is that myelin that coats those nerve fibers. Mm-hmm. That shrinks, and that slows down the speed at which nerve signals travel and reduce overall processing speed. So your reaction time and thought processes are much slower. Chemical imbalances, where your brain doesn't put out as many neurotransmitters like the dopamine, acetylcholine, and that impacts mood, attention, and memory recall. And then protein accumulation, because the waste products and misfolded proteins clump together in the brain, things like beta amyloid involved in Alzheimer's can really ramp up. So despite these changes, the brain retains a remarkable ability to change and adapt. We'd call that neuroplasticity. So even though complex learning and multitasking require more time, things like vocabulary, reading comprehension, and verbal reasoning, they often stay stable even though when one gets onto a more protected age.
If one has, and I see a question, we are going to go to ads, but I just see one question for you to think about. If one has an illness that is estrogen related, it's you can't have hormonal replacement or medication that produces estrogen. That is definitely a problem. That is according to one of our listeners. It is a 641.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 6:42. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg. We're talking about aging. We're talking about longevity. We are focusing right now for the next few minutes on the brain, after which we're going to move on to the future of longevity science. Is memory decline inevitable?
Definitely not.
Good. Next. Oh. Yeah.
I just think that, you know, you get normal aging and you get an abnormal decline. You know, there are certain things that actually can protect the brain. You know, if you do physical activity, mental stimulation, your diet, your quality of sleep, these things all protect the brain and help with things. And we've got to also, like, understand that there's a difference between simple absent-mindedness and mm-hmm. cognitive decline in the brain.
Okay. And then just to try and understand, I mean, we have spoken about, and we've had a different session on dementia and Alzheimer's, but maybe just for the sake of completion, just talk to that for a bit.
So, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's are increasing because, you know, with advanced age, it's a risk factor for these conditions to actually occur. So the global population is living longer, life expectancy has gone up, so then more people survive into the 80s and 90s when dementia is more common. And, you know, if you look at metabolic and lifestyle factors, so obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, these factors can damage blood vessels, increase inflammation, which is directly linked to an increased risk of cognitive decline. We've got better diagnostic processes to diagnose these things. And even environmental factors, as I said previously, that you can actually know that there's emerging research that shows chronic exposure to air pollution can contribute to cognitive decline in neurodegeneration. So there's many things that, you know, add to these type of processes, but doesn't mean because you're going to get old, you definitively will get Alzheimer's or dementia.
All right. And talking about exercise as a way to protect the brain.
So that's the most one of the most powerful ways to protect the brain and enhance brain health. It improves memory, increases brain volume, it boosts your neurochemicals. So you get something called a brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a protein that acts like miracle growth for your brain because it supports survival and growth of your neurons. It improves your blood flow. It promotes that neuroplasticity, which helps the brain stay adaptable. So in other words, it's able to learn new skills, and it reduces cognitive decline. Studies indicate that actually like regular physical activity reduces the risk of developing Alzheimer's. And the target is to aim for 150 minutes of moderate intense exercise, such as brisk walking, swimming or cycling, as well as mind-body activities, which are low impact, such as Tai Chi or yoga, and outdoor activities, walking or running, to offer additional mood and cognitive like benefits.
Right. And in terms of inflammation and loneliness, those aren't the same thing, yeah. But I'm just...
So inflammation, remember we said something called inflammaging.
Yes.
And that's the chronic inflammation driving brain aging. And that's a low-grade persistent immune response that silently degrades your brain tissue over time and lands up causing cognitive decline, disrupts the neural communication. And that's also due to the fact that we get a breakdown of what we call the blood-brain barrier. So age-related weakening of this protective barrier allows all these inflammatory proteins to go through this area and into the brain, and that further accelerates cellular damage. And then if you look at like things like loneliness is a very big risk factor because it acts as a chronic physiological stressor which increases premature death by up to 30%. Because
what?
Yeah. Loneliness 30%? Actually can trigger your brain's ancient survival mechanisms, which cause chronic elevation in stress, hormones like cortisol. It causes systemic inflammation, weakens your immune system, makes your body more susceptible to diseases. It also can elevate your blood pressure, increase your vascular resistance. It accelerates your biological aging, can increase your cognitive decline, and lands up causing unhealthy behaviors because people experiencing profound loneliness are more likely to suffer from sleep deprivation, engage in less physical activity, and maintain poorer overall health.
It's absolutely remarkable to think about that. Send us your questions, 0618951019. So, myth busting very quickly. Brain decline is unavoidable. True or not true?
Untrue.
Okay. You can't build muscle after 60.
Untrue. You definitely can. It's very important that it's because your body never loses that ability to undergo muscle protein synthesis. It just requires a more consistent approach. So you've got to actually overload those muscles more. You slowly increase like weight, frequency, number of repetitions in your resistance training. Take a higher protein intake as we age because our bodies become less responsive to this protein. So you actually got to increase your protein to 1 to 2 grams of protein per kilogram. And then our supplements, as we've said this before, supplement with creatine monohydrate. carbohydrate. Creatine is very important. It's a safe, effective way for adults to increase muscle mass and exercise performance, as long as you're taking in enough fluids with it and as long as you've got a good kidney function.
I don't think you've actually prescribed creatine to me. I think we need to talk about that, but we will.
We actually do. It's very important. Don't
really?
Actually, write that down.
I'm going to write that down. No,
don't forget.
I don't need to write it down because my mind is a machine. What are the most exciting developments in longevity science today?
So this landscape has shifted essentially theoretical anti-aging concepts to what we call evidence-based interventions. And that aims at expanding human health span, and that's the years we spend free of chronic disease and frailty. So there's something called in vivo cellular reprogramming. Scientists are actually looking at extending life by reversing the biological age. And we spoke about it earlier. That's something like this. Life Biosciences uses that Yamanaka factor, where they reset your patterns of age cells back to a younger state. Then you get something called next generation senolytics, where damaged cells stop dividing but refuse to die, secreting toxic chemicals that cause inflammation. So there are now drugs out there called dasatinib and quercetin, which prove effective at clearing these zombie cells in trials. You get AI-driven systems, biology, and digital twins, and that's an accelerated drug discovery and biomarker mapping. Mm-hmm. So the latest trend is what we call a whole-body digital twin. Longevity platforms, they use these advanced computational modules to simulate how anti-aging compounds
impact
every organ. In other
words, they make another you, and they almost...
And that they can test and refine treatments in this virtual server form by administering to essentially human volunteers.
I don't think that the world could cope with two of me.
It's difficult enough to come up with that.
There's
things like mitochondria factories and nanoflies. So remember, mitochondrial decline is a hallmark of biological aging. It drops your cellular energy production over time. And bioengineers are looking at nanoflowers to transform these stem cells into miniature mitochondrial production plants, which then could combat muscle loss, fatty liver disease, as well as cognitive decline. And then the existing medication was using now, things like the GLP-1 receptor agonists, which were originally for diabetes and obesity, drastically lower the risk of death from stroke and heart attacks and protect your liver against kidney and kidney functions. Repurposed compounds like rapamycin, which is a drug actually used for immune suppression in someone who's had an organ transplant. Trials are showing that it downregulates your cellular stress response and enhances metabolic pathways.
Absolutely insane. It is 6:49. We're going to take a quick ad break. We'll be back for the last portion of this conversation just after this.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is 6:50. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Marburg talking about longevity. So let's just try and understand, because you mentioned it before, the role of mitochondria in aging.
So I think we've got to understand the mitochondria are part of your cell. And they act as what we call a cellular power plant. They regulate your lifespan. So they can generate energy, they can manage cellular waste, they can communicate with the nucleus in the cell on how bodies age. As we get older, they accelerate aging, which, while preserving their function, can promote longevity and metabolic health. So they do this by a process of called oxidative stress. That's called your free radical theory. So energy production creates these toxic byproducts, which are called reactive oxidant species. So these high levels of reactive oxidant species damage your cellular structures, and low levels act as a signaling molecule that trigger these protective cellular mechanisms. So if your mitochondrial DNA is very vulnerable to damage, then it doesn't have that repair mechanism of the nuclear DNA, and these mutations accumulate over time and cause energy failure. So we've got to look at a way to boost those mitochondria. Some of the ways are with peptides, because your mitochondria communicate with the rest of your body through metabolites like something called NAD and specialized proteins called mitokines. And NAD itself is also very important, because NAD is a coenzyme, okay?
Right.
Nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. That's a critical coenzyme found in every cell that acts as an electron, almost like a shuttle, okay? And it drives a process by which the mitochondria turn these nutrients into usable cellular energy. It's called ATP. So generally, when I start somebody on a mitochondrial product, like a MOTC or SS31 together, after the first month, once they've got used up, then I add an NAD, because as we age, our natural NAD levels decline drastically, and that makes your mitochondria sluggish. So DNA, then repair failure, chronic cellular fatigue, these NAD molecules actually help with your movement of your mitochondria.
That's incredible. Absolutely unbelievable.
That's fascinating. This is a fascinating science.
It really, really is. So how close are we to dramatically extending human lifespan?
It's a very, very loaded question, because it's almost like you got to ask yourself, what happened with the Tower of Babel, when, you know, people were climbing that that tower and then enough is enough. So are we actually increasing human lifespan? Are we changing the DNA of people so that, that people actually will live for longer and live forever? So I think it's important to understand that we are at a very big sort of crossroad of increasing this lifespan, because we're changing habits. We're promoting exercise. We're promoting better sleep. We're promoting a decrease in stress and chronic inflammation. We're creating a space where we're trying to make everyone as healthy as possible and go into a health trajectory that improves their cardiovascular health, the blood sugar regulation, muscle and bone mass changes, cellular metabolic benefits. So we are closer to lifespan prolongation.
It's actually so, it's really just remarkable. I'm going to go through some rapid fire questions for you.
Okay,
you ready? Ready? Because there's a time trial here. It's like High Rocks. Most powerful longevity habit.
I want you to answer that.
Oh, stop it. Okay,
next. That's consistent physical activity.
Yes, fine. I got
aerobic
it.
And resistance training.
Yes. Got it. Most overrated anti-aging trend. That's ice baths.
No, it's actually not. Because actually, funny enough, now that you brought that, ice baths. Okay, and cryotherapy have a role in anti-aging. Okay?
I thought cryotherapy is when they freeze us when we're dead so they can bring us back to life.
So there's different types of cryotherapy. So short-term cryotherapy of a three-minute period or a three-minute ice bath actually revitalize, if you've got a healthy cardiac system, revitalize your system to reproduce and actually like reboot your system.
Interesting.
But the most overrated anti-aging trend is, this is going to blow your mind, excessive daily facial massage and face yoga. Because you get a vigorous, repeated upward stroke and straining of your facial muscles, and that actually accelerates fat loss in the face, leading to sunken, sagging appearance over time. So it actually works.
So don't use it, guys, to replace your Botox. Your most underrated blood test.
Yeah. So I would say fasting insulin is very much underrated. Apolipoprotein B, highly sensitive CRP, lipoprotein A.
No, excuse me. You can't answer them all. You had one.
Okay, I'll start with fasting insulin.
Fine, done. One thing that people should stop doing immediately.
Stop ignoring routine prevention.
I don't think so. And one thing every person over 40 should start doing now.
Routine prevention.
Exercise.
Man. Yeah,
no, I would say it'd surely be weight-bearing exercise.
Well, it's a combination of aerobic and resistance training.
I keep trying to see what I try to do there. And will humans eventually live meaningfully beyond 100?
It's a tough one. I don't believe so. I mean,
really?
Because if you think about it, the world will be extremely overpopulated. Mm. We won't have space for humans. We'll run out of foods. We'll run out of our daily supplies of things. If you overpopulate, there's got to be some sort of, in inverted commas, culling system where people die. People have to die for new generations to develop.
So what a horrible way to end this. No, I'm not ending it like this.
Yeah, it's a true story.
So tell me what, I'm not ending it like this. We're going nowhere, pal, until you think about what you've just said. What excites you most then about the medical longevity?
I think medical longevity is the most exciting part of medicine, because it encapsulates your peptides, it encapsulates activity, it encapsulates good sleep,
brings
it
everything together,
good science together. So you've got a whole host of things you get, even aesthetics, because when you look good, you feel good and you want to do better. So
True story.
Look good, you want to exercise more, you want to eat better, you want to get a better, like people to perceive you better, and you feel better. So looking after your health lands up causing good consequences.
That's where we leave it. Dr. Anton Meiberg, thank you. We still need to do, when we're off air, we'll talk about creatine. But it is 18:56. I'm Howard Feldman. This has been your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg, ably assisted by Craig. Craig, thank you. As always, we'll be back next week, same time, same place. We'll see you then. Don't be late.